December the 16th. Now, when you met Aline, or when you when you married her and started living together and so on, or when you knew her more intimately,
which
Aline,
which granular when I married her.
Yes, I mean,
two are not there.
I know. But the question can cover. I mean, what was her relations, her attitude to Judaism?
To Judaism. Yes.
Zionism.
Yes, exactly. When I first came to know her, which was in Oxford, roughly, in 1946, she knew very little about the Jewish religion. She knew there was Yom Kippur. She certainly had breakfast one day of Yom Kippur and then went to synagogue and was very shocked when she discovered she ought to have fasted. There was no Seder. She knew Shema Israel. She knew they were Jews. I mean, they were very clearly Jews. There was absolutely no question about the identification of the family. Some relations were, I think, not as so much, but her husbands were baptized. Her husband's father was certainly baptized, Strauss. So were his daughters. The husband was not, when she married. He was not very married. He was a Jew, he remained one. Took no. Her husband, yes.
And the children?
Also. No question. There was no baptism of any kind in the immediate and whatnot. But they lived in a world where people sometimes were and sometimes weren't. It was a kind of, in that sense, no particular horror was felt with baptism. It was a mixed world of partly Jews, partly not. But they were certainly Jews. The mother was always described by Aline's brother as a typical Israelite Française, which is exactly what she was. She was very much part of the Jewish proper establishment in France, of old Jewish family, Muslim and so on.
That would go to synagogue in Rosh Hashanah?
Not Rosh Hashanah, no. Yom Kippur at most. Rue Copernic, which I think must be the Reform one.
Not the Reform, but it's the 16th arrondissement.
16th arrondissement, certainly. I know, but it's perhaps Orthodox, officially. One of her mother's sisters became rather religious. I mean, she just died at the age of 98. Mm-hmm. She used to go to New York during and after the war. She had some rabbi with a friend, I think it was a Reform ceremony in America, and she went quite regularly. And that was regarded as slightly surprising, perhaps slightly ridiculous, but perfectly tolerated and understood. So there was no problem in that sense. What she did tell Aline then, of course, was that when the anti-Jewish stuff began under Vichy, she was always meeting, not always, used to meet people, which of course it wasn't against people like you. I mean, if everyone was like you, but you must understand the Jews were a little too prominent, this and that. And then she was always very stern and insulting in return, and wouldn't speak to people like that. Nor after the war, when she met them. If they bad then, and expelled Jews from the Morfontaine Golf Club, she cut them out of her life, and felt very Jewish, and has done ever since. I'm too Jewish for her.
Yeah.
Well, certainly.
Still?
Yes. Because I'm old. She's very concerned about Israel. Deeply. I mean, every morning she's upset about what happens. She's not left indifferent. Far from it. And she likes Israelis and so on. But broadly speaking, she is absolutely 100% Jewish. In that sense. No question. But the fact that her first and third sons married non-Jews, didn't matter to her very much. Didn't mind. She thought that was all right.
Now, the relations told
Israel... She's perfectly tolerant. What she knows about the Jews, she's largely learned from me. Inevitably. Because I was such a Jew that the infection hopefully took place. But it's a bit, sometimes a bit too much for her. Still is. Well, it would be too much for anybody. I didn't go too far.
Now,
and I'm much more Jewish than I was in the 30s.
You are
much more, far more.
I can see from the
But I didn't know any Jews in the 30s very much.
I was
a Zionist. And I used to talk, let us say, once or twice a year to the Zionist site in Oxford and made Zionist propaganda. But I had very few Jewish friends.
Yes.
Hardly any. Herbert Hart was about the only one.
Yes, and he's Jewish, but he's the other.
Pretty marginal.
Yes, exactly.
He's more so now.
Yes, he's more Jewish now than you are.
Of course.
Sure.
But still, he was not in favor of the Jewish state or anything like that.
Yes,
far from it.
Now, and the attitude toward Zionism and Israel was also your impact on Aline.
Totally. Zionism, well, I'll tell you. Her brother, who was rather curious, slightly eccentric figure, had a kind of strong pro-Jewish period.
Philippe.
I think before the war. And was taken up by a man called, I think, Gamzu.
Yes.
Well.
An art critic who lived in Paris.
But he did a lot of Jewish stuff. He was tremendous.
He came from Palestine.
I don't know if the same one, must be the same.
Yes,
and I met him, and he was influenced by him. And he worked for the Jews. And then in 1940, and so on, and he was among the people who was deceived by the fact that special arrangements made the Jews in Vichy, thought they were all persuaded that this was all right, and this was our good, and so on.
Who was the Philippe?
In 1939, when he ceased to be in the army.
Yeah.
Then, of course, he went to the resistance. Then after the war, he was tremendous. He went to Palestine once, became very anti-Zionist.
Anti-Zionist?
Yes, yes.
After his visit?
And whether after or not. Mm-hmm. And he was a friend Jew. But he went about from one thing to another. I mean, somebody changed his views from time to time. He was passionate, rather eccentric. Honorable, but went from one thing to another.
Yes.
That had no interest in Aline, whatever.
Yes.
And his children are not really much. Well, one daughter, I think, did busy with all the Jewish things. His first wife, Antoinette, is again Israeli Française.
Yes.
Absolutely.
And
doesn't know much about it, but feels strictly Jewish.
Now, I mean, you met in Aline's family, I mean, the father you met only once.
That's right.
The mother more frequently.
Yes.
And she was very shy.
Yes.
You met Philippe. Does Aline have other brothers or sisters?
No, they're dead. There were two more. One died in when he was in military service before the war. And the other fell off a horse. All this before the war. For a new Aline.
So, Zionism, Israel, Judaism was not a topic of conversation between you and them. I mean...
No. Not at all. Well, there was Philippe a bit. But of course, Philippe was very unfriendly to me when I first married Aline, because he thought I was a typical Jewish intellectual that he hated.
And he hated Jewish intellectuals.
He was left-wing. Jewish intellectual taboo. Then he met me, found I was not all that left-wing,
yes.
So we made great friends. I was quite different from what they anticipated. He thought I was a clever, left-wing, rather sort of, I don't know, he's slightly hysterical, typical intellectual. Turned out I was all right.
Now, was he a type of man who, I mean, he was quite a figure in the resistance.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah,
there was a prize on
his name.
Was
a
yes.
Was
he
a type
he was
of,
very brave.
Was he a type of man that liked to speak about this period and
yes.
to meet people?
Certainly.
And,
certainly.
Uh-huh.
He was badly, He was badly treated by the French Resistance because he belonged to the English wing, French Resistance. He took orders from England, from Messerie, and therefore was disapproved of by all the anti-English bits of the French Resistance. There were, conflicts between them. And he was regarded as a slave of the English. But he got an MBE, I think, from the English. Some decoration he got from the English. Something in France, too. But he was very courageous. He was very like a Russian landowner of the 19th century, who read intellectual books, didn't quite know what to do with himself, was called a superfluous person of a noble kind, described Turgenev. Yes. Yes. Oh, rightly. He was very sympathetic. He was very sympathetic. He was a nice man and eccentric. But honorable, spontaneous, and I think quite diligent. So the late Mr. Alpern thought he was not. And he was married to his first wife was a French prostitute, which he did entirely in order to annoy the family, I think, very typically. And he wrote even a short story about his terrible family. But then the second wife was Antoinette, who was a very jolly little friend who is still about, who is sweet and charming and absolutely innocent. And the third wife was the daughter of the Marquis de Grammont, whom he met during resistance. Who was a Catholic, she survived him. And they had a romantic affair during the resistance. And then he got rid of his Jewish wife and married her. Was very excited by all the dukes and marquises, all of whom were her cousins. Kind of Proustian excitement. They didn't get on too well. But still, they stayed married. You see? She used to complain about him to me, saying these Gainsbourgs are impossible. Aline used to be offended, and that was it.
But Aline liked.
Very, very much indeed.
I saw.
Very, very much.
I could see.
Very much indeed. Very much indeed.
She liked.
They were devoted to each other.
Yes.
They loved each other. They loved each other. No, that was it. When he died, it was a crushing blow. She knew he was ill. She knew all that, but still, when he died, she was very, very upset. Very. He was not too nice to his mother, because he thought she was too bourgeois for him, but loved his father, and loved his grandfather, his mother's father, who was a jolly, rich, French, Jewish industrialist, but who was exactly like the kind of Frenchman of his time. When he described to me going traveling, with his grandfather staying in some country hotel, a lot of commercial travelers, and his father went in and saw the billiard room, and immediately took part in the game, in a very enthusiastic way. He thought that was marvelous. That's how people should behave. The grandfather did not want to leave France. Everything he wanted could be obtained in France. Came to England once, absolutely hated it. He says, one doesn't speak, on ne parle pas français, no good at all. No, can't visit a country like that. But my father-in-law was an Anglomaniac. He came to England once a month, ostensibly on some business.
Really?
But he adored it. He adored it. He bought cigars here, he bought suits, he adored the English.
So your father and your father-in-law?
Both.
Fantastic.
They were not dissimilar as human beings.
Yes.
My father-in-law was a better family than my father, but their tastes were not very different, except my father-in-law was much more Russian. I mean, when the 1914 war started, he put his male children into little Russian military uniforms. So joke, children's uniforms. And he remained a Tsarist citizen to the end. Then Nansen passport, would not become French.
Your father?
No. Never became French citizen. Then he became American during the war. He remained a Nansen passport. He was a white Russian.
Aline's father?
Yeah.
And
loyal to Russia. His friends came from the people, various colonels in Russia, and provisional government liberals.
That I can see.
Yes.
To the understand that not obtaining
No. I'm telling you. Very extraordinary.
And his brothers?
I don't know about them. One brother was in Holland, and the other brothers, I can't remember, also lived in Paris. One was in Shanghai. I have no idea about that.
Now,
one brother supported Diaghilev in the Russian ballet.
Of
Pierre, yes. Pierre, as he was called. And he was killed during the war in the Caucasus, as in the Russian army, somewhere.
In the first war?
Yes. They were allowed, they were officers of the Russian army, because they were barons. However, they could become, and one or two did become, officers, I think.
Now, when you start, I mean, when...
They were very conformist, the Ginsburgs. I mean, they believed that if the Tsar knew, there wouldn't be these pogroms. Of course, there was anti-Semitism, there were pogroms, but a lot of quite decent Russians around them. My father-in-law thought that Zionism was rather the way in which you and I think of fascism. Hated it. It was a monstrous thing. And lunatic nationalism, the most mad and terrible kind.
Did he become French?
No.
No.
He was a Russian who lived in France many years. Russian baron who lived in France many years, was married to a French woman and had French children, but himself remained some kind of an exile baron.
Did he create any tension between his children?
He preferred England to France. He never he talked French perfectly, as you can imagine, but he never went to his wife and everybody, his children, but never totally liked France.
Now, did he create any tension between him and Aline?
None. He was very quiet, very gentle, very sweet. They were all devoted to him, but they did feel that he was a little too pale a character. Hardly couldn't speak to his neighbor at dinner if he didn't know what to say. Silent and shy.
And
but everybody knew he was a tremendous gentleman. That was obvious.
Now, Ali feels French?
Yes. To a large degree. Mixed French.
Does
doesn't know what she is.
Bilingual, totally. I mean,
yes. She was born in England.
She was born in England.
Curiously enough, in 1915. Because the family left Paris because of the bombs in the First World War, imagine.
And so then, for several years...
She was taken back. No, she was taken back during the war. She's bilingual, yes.
But
does not feel English.
English of somebody who acquired it at a young age. Did she go to an English school?
No, but she was taught... She knew English somehow. She must have been English teachers. Her English, she spoke English freely as a young woman.
Nowadays, does she mind, let's say, reading literature? I mean, does the French literature
mean more?
Without a doubt. So
she feels there is this Russian Jewish background which makes her different. She doesn't feel a French woman, but she feels closer, more familiar with French customs, French food, French accent, French everything.
If you were not a professor in Oxford,
right,
and if you would not have been felt alien in a way to the French, she would have preferred to live there.
Maybe. Well, of course, her second husband did go back to Paris after he left, after they were separated. He lived in France. After that, French Switzerland.
When she met you, still most of her friends were
friend,
in France.
Of course.
Now,
she felt quite happy in England, but it wasn't her country. She was a very well-received, comfortable foreigner. Much liked and so on. In fact, she played golf. It was a very English characteristic. She's quite all right.
Did she keep an intimate friendship with French friends?
Yes, relations. more than friends. Not friends very much. I don't think our family ever knew very many non-Jews. There were non-Jewish friends, but on the whole, they were just part of the Jewish upper class. And such Frenchmen as they speak associated with them, who existed?
No.
But she still likes going to dinner at the French embassy.
In the French embassy?
Yes. And they look on her as a compatriot.
Now, when you came to, as I said, when you met and became closer and closer friends, and then when you married.
What I want to say is on the telephone, she talks as much French as English, even now.
Even now, yes.
Someone like Lilian, the Rothschild, is her best friend. She was brought up with the Fuld Springer, or Fuld Sperger family. These were Viennese Jews who had become completely Gallicized. One married Rothschild, one married Harold Price Jones, one married the French ambassador in Norway, Spanish ambassador in Norway, whose name was, whose grandfather certainly was a Jew from Czechoslovakia, called Proper. Proper, he Callejon, who was a Spanish Catholic.
So that's the family whose Price Jones' wife is from, Springer.
She was the sister of Elie the Rothschild's wife. These were girls who were brought up with her in the same house in Paris.
Okay.
They were most intimate friends.
Ah, so the relations with Price Jones
are
not with you?
No,
I have.
I'm not a friend of his, particularly.
I see, so it's the mother of David is actually the friend of Aline.
Who is now dead. She's dead.
She's dead, yes.
That's what I got. She's absolutely. Entirely that way.
I thought that it was...
Well, he knew the Rothschilds too. But the main thing was he married into this set of French Jews.
Yes.
And they all became circulated among them.
No, I mean, because I was sure...
Nothing with me.
Now, generally speaking, when it comes to judgment of people,
yes,
do you agree more, with your attitudes and judgments of you and Aline? When you first met and you built your life together, the natural problem arises, you have friends, she has friends, you meet people.
I know what you mean. Yes, on the whole. I mean, I lost some friends, she lost some friends. It always happens in marriage.
Yes.
Broadly, our opinions coincided, yes.
Does.
Oh, yes.
To this day,
she doesn't like people I don't like at all. And I don't like people she doesn't like. Occasionally, there are differences. But I'm not acute. There's nobody whom I like, whom I can't bring to see her. And then she likes, whom she has to avoid. Because I can't stand them.
And is there somebody... I mean, among your friends, that you were sorry or are still sorry that you lost because of...
Yes, not very many. Yeah, there are a few, yes.
And the other way around?
I've not lost them completely, but I don't see them.
You see them less?
Yes.
For example?
Well, I'll tell you. The daughter of Mr. Fisher, warden of New College, called Mary Fisher, an intimate friend of mine in the 30s. She married a civil servant in the colonial office, who is plainly anti-Israeli. And so they live in Oxford. She became head of St. Hilda's College for years. She's called Mrs. What is her name? I forgot her name. Anyway, and she was a great friend. I didn't see her very much. Partly because she married a man I didn't like. So that also produced an alienation. Who else?
I met her in 61. She lived in Sussex, so sorry.
Certainly.
I mean, Elizabeth Monroe gave me a ride somewhere.
Sorry.
And they were friends.
Sorry, yes,
Elizabeth
they were.
And,
no doubt.
Close
friends I didn't know.
Yes, they were. Now,
via the colonial office.
No,
she was in the colonial office during the war, very official.
Ah,
she worked.
I thought that they were studying together.
Not at all. No. No, no.
So this is a kind of friendship that somehow dissolves.
So yes, yes. I mean, if I see her now,
yes,
we're on very good terms.
Yes,
but,
yes.
Well, there was girls that I knew in my youth who were friends. I'd rather forgotten myself. I mean, I didn't see that much of who.
Well, so it means that it was not that...
No, there wasn't a rather big...
No. Sorry to have lost some friends?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I'm rather sorry that I can't bear to go to France.
That I discovered
it's true. Oh, it's a great, it's a great, it's a great sorrow. Great sorrow to and my only reason is I cannot understand a word they say.
Yes.
My French is too bad.
Yeah, you always repeat it.
What?
You always tell me.
It's true. Nobody believes it, but it's true.
Yes. I mean,
I simply can't understand them when they talk. That creates impossibility of association.
No, the new generation now speaks English
better. But Aline doesn't like speaking English to the French. Any more than I like speaking English to Russians.
Yeah, I can see.
Now, certain people I talk Russian to, certain people she speaks French to. That creates certain differences. But it's a joke. Not very serious. But still, I don't often go to Paris. No one I can talk. Nobody for me to speak to.
Yeah, I observed it, and
it's true.
I mean,
of course, when they come to stay with us, they talk English.
Yeah.
Their French friends, or as well.
And you never established a close relationship with a French scholar or
never. Intellectual. Never. And never could.
Did anybody try to get close to you? Or
Frenchmen?
Frenchmen,
yeah. No. There were never very few Frenchmen in England in my time.
Yeah.
Germans, yes. French, not.
Yeah.
Was he?
Because of the Roth Fellowship, partly.
Well, partly that. Partly because the natural...
The French never sent the people abroad?
So? Well, first of all, they sent to Germany.
Okay.
Yes.
Exactly.
But not to England. Yes. Yes. And sociology and that kind of thing.
Yes.
And the English went to Paris in the 80s, 90s, to start, because the historians were there, Imperial Renan, all that sort of thing, and so on. But there's natural affinity, the English and the Germans. There is no natural affinity, the English and the French. And Bloomsbury was Francophile, and that's exceptional. The English don't like the French don't like the English. Never have.
And types like Nancy Mitford, for example.
Yes, she was exceptional. She went.
Did Ali know her?
No, I did. I didn't like her at all.
No.
People liked her, but I thought all Mitford were horrible. Awful.
The
entire family was awful.
Yes.
I met Tom Mitford, her brother, before the war. So I thought he was pretty awful. Then there was the Unity and there was Diana, who I didn't know. Then there was Nancy, who I met. It didn't seem nice. She once insulted me behind my back. Probably didn't help. She said to somebody, Roy Harrod, that I was like a foreigner who learned to speak like Maurice Barra, who didn't quite know what the words meant.
Okay.
Well, that I didn't much.
I wasn't
very pleased by that.
Yeah.
But she was very nice to me. When we met, she always tried to make friends. No good. I thought she wasn't a nice person. Just not. Nor, well, there's a Duchess of Devonshire, whom I meet from time to time, but I particularly like, who's a sister.
And Jessica.
Jessica I get on with quite well. She came to see, I don't know, she came to see me about Philip Toynbee. I thought she was the most human. Most human.
One can see it on the television.
She's the most human. She's a bit crazy. But the most human.
One book I like, The Pursuit of Love.
Oh, she's a very good writer.
Good book.
She's a very good writer.
Nancy.
She's a very good writer. Nancy.
I mean,
she's a very good writer. And she, of course, is a Labour Party.
Yes.
Well, married her. Her first husband was a straight socialist. It's called Rod. Nancy Rod, she was. Mm-hmm. Then she fell in love with Palevsky.
Yes, Tom Palevsky.
Extraordinary. He was a pockmarked, ugly little man. Mm. Described in heroic and idealized terms in the books. Uh-huh. Yes. He's quite jolly, quite nice, quite amiable, talkative, of Polish Jewish origin, I think. Maybe ultimately, yes.
Now, what exactly did she say behind your back that you didn't like? The phrase was?
Said, Berlin seems to, as our Berlin, seems to be like somebody who's learned to talk English, like Maurice Barra, but doesn't quite understand what the words mean. Not simple, I agree, not plausible. I probably did talk like that.
When did she say
that? I don't know.
In the 30s?
Yes. Yes. Before the war. Well before the war. She denied she said it.
Yes.
Absolutely. Passionately. Not to me, but to other people. She knew that I repeated this to her. She said they never could have said that. Absolutely untrue. Well, perhaps it is. But anyway, I'm telling you, that's what slightly prejudiced me in the first place.
Now, why did you decide to buy the house in Paradji? I mean,
I can tell you.
Why near the sea or not
wait,
the
wait,
mountains?
Wait, wait, wait. I can explain all that.
Yeah.
We were in Moscow in 1956. Virtually, almost honeymoon. We were married in February. We went to Sicily in the spring. And that's where I was offered my knighthood, which was caused a great distress to me. And then it produced almost, and I was made ill by it.
What do you mean it created great distress?
I didn't want it. You don't know that story?
No.
I knew Macmillan.
For it
I will. I knew Macmillan, because I met him in All Souls. He was a friend of the warden of All Souls, Sumner. They were together at Bellu. So one night he dined there. I knew who he was, of course. But I sat next to him at dinner. We got on very well. After dinner, he talked to me again, and he read my telegrams, which he thought very well of, and kept telling me how wonderful they were. And I remember a marvelous statement he made. Of course, you know Roger Makins, he said. A great friend of mine, he said. He's just as clever as Lasky, and he's on our side. And he's a Christian. And he's a Christian, and he's on our side. I'll never forget that remark. But I always got on very well with Macmillan. I used to see him in after years. Macmillan was no more pro-Jewish than any other member of the upper classes. Pro-Israel, yes. And he didn't mind Jews, but he thought of Jews as Jews. Didn't think they were English. Anyway, then I must have met him once or twice again. I don't know. I'll tell you. I met him, for example, at lunch with Lord Cholmondeley. Lady Cholmondeley is a Sassoon.
Oh, yes.
He's half Rothschild, half Sassoon. She's still alive. She must be 94, I think. She was a famous society lady. She was Philip Sassoon's sister. And I don't know, I met her somehow. Aline, I knew her. She was a Rothschild somehow. And now we met. I still know her. There's this marvelous country house. And we went to lunch there. And that was my film. And he always quite enjoyed talking to me. I to him, I still remember that he asked me whom he ought to make Regius Professor of History. This is just when Trevor Roper was ultimately appointed. And I said to him, I thought I oughtn't to give him advice about that. And that later infuriated Taylor. I said, well, you ought, if you can, you ought to find a black, homosexual, lesbian negress. That'd be the most suitable appointment for the moment. That kind of a joke. You see? Black, lesbian, negress. Black communism, sorry. Black, communist, lesbian, negress. Negress. That'd be the most suitable appointment. So I got off on that, which is rather like an anti-Semitic remark. I shouldn't have said the same qualities anti-Semitism. But I see why people make such jokes. And he was quite jolly about that. And then suddenly, to my great surprise, I received a letter offering me a knighthood. And I didn't want it, partly because I thought my colleagues wouldn't like it. They'd be jealous, they'd be displeased. I didn't do anything to deserve it. I hadn't done anything lately. I hadn't written anything and done anything. It's just a pure dip, sort of present, thrown to me by Macmillan, just because he liked me. It's just a, exactly like a tip given to some waiter, I felt. I mean, just someone, what a present suddenly given to someone one quite likes. So I wondered whether they would accept it. And I'm always very uncertain about such things. I consulted people, as I always do. David Cecil said, you must. It's wrong not to, why not? It's perfectly all right. We'll enjoy it.
Who else did you
consult? Aline, her mother, was staying here. Aline said she didn't mind if I took it or not. All went well. Absolutely indifferent. Complete indifference. Didn't care. Her mother said, I can see by what you were saying, you won't accept it. This is how I talked. Then, it was after I came back from Sicily, that's exactly, it's sort of late April, I think, of that year. It was to do with the birthday honors.
Yes.
Birthday honors, which were in June. Then, wait a minute, who else to ask? I asked Scarrow, the Warden of All Souls. We didn't know, he was against it. Didn't suit me. Somehow, I'm, sir, no, not quite right for you. It doesn't quite so, doesn't fit. Right? Then I couldn't get so many people, because I didn't want them to know. I didn't want to say it was offered to me, I refused. Then I didn't know what to do, sir.
Did you ask Herbert, did you ask Stuart?
No. I knew that they would be against, I mean, not something they want anyway. They would say, well, do it if you like. They wouldn't reveal. Herbert refused it, you see. His knighthood. Stuart accepted his, but wasn't very happy to. That was done by me. I did it to embarrass him. But I succeeded.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. Purely malicious act. Purely malicious act. I got it for Stephen Spender, who adores it, and I got it for Stuart, who hates it.
But he didn't refuse.
His wife told him it was very bad manners to refuse. His wife made him do it. First wife. Renee.
Yes.
She was very snobbish. She was very snobbish.
I'm telling you,
of course. Fantastic. She was rather pro-communist, left-wing, but she regarded us as being born a very good family and having very good manners. Stuart was always saying how aristocratic she was. It was not entirely true.
But when Stuart accepted it, she was still alive?
Oh, yes.
And she was his treasure?
Lady Hampshire. I'm telling you, he might have refused. She said he must be gone. Very bad manners. Dreadful thing to refuse. It's terribly, snobbish and awful to refuse. No, not at all. Oh, no. She always talked about people's manners. Always talked about people having good and bad manners. She may have been pro-proletarian, but very anti-middle class. You see, she regarded herself as well-born. Her father was a kind of Irish adventurer. On her mother's side, she was, I think, related to some Lord somewhere. Stuart used to explain very carefully that she was a real aristocracy, a little dowdy, living in the country, not sort of smooth, sort of shiny London society. That was a vulgar part of aristocracy. The real aristocracy were quiet people living in country houses. That's the real world she belonged to. It wasn't true, but he believed it.
And
still does.
It was quite natural.
Oh, absolutely. Couldn't think why not. Well, then I went to London, and I saw my mother. And I said to my mother, this is a true story. Nobody quite believes. I said to my mother, they've offered me a knighthood. And she said, I was very pleased. I said, I'm going to refuse it. I said to her, I can't bear it. She looked very sad and said, well, you must do what you think right. You must do exactly what you want. I have nothing to say to her, I'm not going to give her advice. But I could see that if I accepted it, it would give her pleasure every hour of every day of her life. That was obvious. And it did. She was a Russian Jewess who knew what servant. O.M. She had no idea what that was. Not the faintest idea. She was told afterwards, people say, you know, it's quite important. But that surprised her. It meant nothing could happen. Never heard the word. And made it. So I certainly something in her life. But all Jew, that did it. I thought it was too selfish. Too selfish. Nobody quite believes it, but it's the true reason. Of course you do. A Jewish mother living alone, a widow. A widow, you see, but unhappy on the whole, and lonely. The thought, and all our thoughts concentrate on me, inevitably. You see, and the thought of my being a knight gave her the most enormous pleasure. And people congratulated her, told her how wonderful it was, and this was source of what's called Nachas, of an enormous kind. You see?
No, I can understand this.
Okay. What is the Hebrew word? Is it Nachas? Or Nachat?
Nachat Ruach.
Nachat Ruach. But the Yiddish is Nachas.
Nachat. It's already Nachas.
The Yiddish is Nachas. Nachat Ruach. It gave a Nachat Ruach of a major kind. I thought I didn't mind all that much. I didn't come, but I thought, I'll tell you what I thought of the knighthood. I thought it was like a paper hat, which people wear at Christmas. It's not wrong, but it's ridiculous. I was in favor of titles in general for people. I'm in favor of honors as such, but not for me.
No, I
it embarrasses me still. I can't say Sir Isaiah with any comfort.
But in 56, when you told...
There weren't that many knights either. 56 is comparatively number of dons. But if knighthood wasn't that great. And there were no peers among dons. Peerage is knighthoods. But I have to tell you that when I was offered a peerage, I refused it. That's not known.
When and why?
By Mrs. Thatcher. In half... Nobody knows it. I tell you because for the sake of the diary. But don't tell anyone.
I don't tell anyone.
The only person I told was Teddy for some reason, in way, Israel.
I hope it will not gossip you.
No. Oh, no, it doesn't, no.
To this day, nobody knows that I
refer to you. No, of course, that's quite right. That is quite right.
I think that Aline told Jennifer, but I do not...
Maybe, know. Yes. And I'll tell, I shall tell Ignatius, as I've told you about him.
Yes, all right.
That's all. But wait, I'll tell you. Now, he doesn't ask a question like that. He refused the peerage. When did she become Prime Minister? How many years ago? 8?
Yeah. 9 years ago.
9 years ago. Well, that was 1979. Yes. When in her second or third month of her prime ministership, she wrote me a letter offering me a peerage. I was sitting in the library upstairs, and Pat opened the letter, which has all my letters, and said, oh, you've been offered a peerage. I said, I won't accept it, no question of it. Pat looked rather surprised. I said, I don't have to think. I don't have to ask Aline, I don't have to ask anybody. Out of question, I said. Certainly not. Now why not? Well, the reasons are not too good. Two reasons, really. One was the company, I thought, was a little bit too vulgar. Wilson had given all these peerages to all these Jews. Lord Weidenfeld, Lord Kagan. It was quite recent, after all. You see, it was 4 months ago. I was offered it, I'm sure, because politically I was okay. I was respectable. I was a Jew. And I wasn't like them. It was a kind of reaction against the Wilson peers. She needed somebody. My peerage went to bell off in the end, so to speak. Somebody of the right kind, one of those right then she was told I was anti-communist. I mean, I was in order from her point of view. You see? And I was thoroughly reputable from her point of view. And this would show that she was in favor of the right kind of Jews, yes. The wrong kind of Jews, not. I'm sure. Consciously or not, this is a kind of reasoning, I think. Because she doesn't give it to many. You see? I mean, Jews aren't principal recipients of this. Unless she needs them politically, which is another matter. So, that's one reason. Second reason was, I thought it would drive me mad. Because every time Palestine, Israel, came up in the House of Lords, I would always feel I must do something. I must make a speech. I must say something. People would start writing to me saying, you must speak. There's a debate coming, and a lot of nasty things will be said. You really must. You have some influence over these people. And they said, that would give me sleepless nights. And that the last thing I wanted was speak in public about anything. Because I really feel perhaps they hate doing it. That was the reason all that. Actually, there are so many Jewish peers now. But still, I was the most Zionist at that period of anybody. There weren't. Before Steve got his peerage, for anybody, you see. Well, under Wilson, I think Weidenfeld was about the only one. But, you see. But anyway, I saw the guide in my eye. I just felt another Jewish peer. It was vulgarity somehow. It became vulgarized by the people who got it. It's a pretty snobbish reaction. But one was snobbish, and the other was the fact I didn't want to have to burn with guilt every time I didn't do anything. Jewish peers obviously don't take it to heart as much as I would. When there is a debate, not many of them speak. But I was very glad not to. Even today, I'm very happy not to be. Lord Berlin would not have suited me at all.
Who suggested to her, you know?
No idea. I don't know who said it. Macmillan thought it for himself. In her case, she hardly knew him.
And
what good Jew? She said, I'd like to give it to a Jew, probably.
What reason did you give her?
I said that I wasn't very interested in politics. That I would feel, if I was in the House of Lords, that I ought to be. I would feel that I wasn't pulling my weight. There's no point just accepting honor's sake. She wrote me a long letter. No, long thing. She was terribly sorry. She thought I would be a very valuable addition to the House of Lords. That she would, people would be very interested in what I would say. Would I reconsider it? So I wrote back and said, no, I'd rather not.
And the OM came later?
Yes.
But shortly.
The OM, wait. No, might not have done. No.
Oh.
Wait a bit. I can tell you. The OM came earlier.
Oh.
Yes. I was already OM. That was enough. And if I was a number of Jewish OMs, one was Zuckerman was already up here. Probably. I was about the only one.
Who suggested you for the OM? What the position?
I'm sure, I don't know, but I'm absolutely convinced it was Wheeler Bennett, who moved in palace circles. You see? He was a historiographer. He was about the palace. He was very to do with royalty, you see. He liked them, they liked him. He's a natural court. And I'm sure he did. When I accused him of it, he didn't deny it. Didn't say yes. But I'm sure that's how it is. Nobody would have thought of it. Jennifer thought it very surprising.
Pardon?
Jennifer yes. thought it very surprising. Yes.
Why?
She didn't think I deserved it.
No.
She said, have you been seeing royalty lately? She said to me in a typical way.
No, she would say it about peerage, but not about the OM.
Oh, certainly. Oh, she thought it was all right, but no. Well, I also accepted with considerable difficulty for the following reasons. My conception of the OM didn't suit me. I thought it only went to real geniuses. For example, Henry Moore. Bertrand Russell. He's my contemporary. No, he got it well after me.
Hmm?
He got it after me.
Ah.
No, wait a minute. No, that time. But in the past.
Uh-huh.
It was offered to Kipling, who I don't think accepted it. That I understand. It was offered to Shaw, who said nothing less than dukedom. Wait a moment. Who else do I think should have had it? The philosopher called G.E. Moore, and certainly, which I took some part. He deserved it. Herbert Samuel, not quite, but understood it. You see, I thought those are the kind of people who really should have been. Not people like me. But I didn't see myself as an equal to any of these people.